Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schrankelberg, and Adam Barrett, sitting next to the lake, I understand, is joined us again today.
Yes, I am. And it's so hot here that it's kind of hard not to jump in.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. Whereas 6 months ago, we were talking and it was snowing and iced over and, you know, freezing pipes and all kinds of good stuff. So
yeah, exactly. And the frustration was that it only for a very short period of time froze enough to where you could skate on it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of was in that useless phase where you can't swim in it, you can't skate on it.
Well, you could always, you know, build a sauna and then you don't have to chop the ice as much. You just dive in.
Yeah. Well, I'm an engineer, so do you know what I actually did? I built a little radio-controlled Jeep thing with a camera on top, mm-hmm. and you could view remotely, and a robotic arm on the back, so we could run that on the lake, and we could like fly airplanes and stuff and still retrieve them. It's really funny. And my daughter, she loves editing film, and she made a video out of it where she actually edited all the views from both that we had, both from the shore and the camera on the Jeep. Mm-hmm. And it was really funny. So we did find fun in that gray area where you can't walk on it.
It's amazing how creative we can be, you know? Mm-hmm. And what you mentioned, though, is that, you know, being an engineer is, I'm sure the first iteration of this contraption and camera setup and stuff, you know, you got a lot of pictures of the wheel on the snow or something like that, and not much else. Did you try to get failures, or did you try to just make it work from the start?
Well, I know what you're getting at here. And I was trying to make it work. I was not trying to get failures. My mindset was very much about getting to where I could use the product and see if the functionality that I was hoping to create worked.
That's common, right? If you've got a vision in mind, I don't know, Adam, maybe you wrote down a product requirements document and had you know, brainstorm session with your creative team to come up with the industrial design, or maybe you just grabbed the duct tape and went for it. Right. But you were building a proto and you were trying to see if I could get this to work, this feature to work. I want this camera angle and I want to be able to do this and so on, right? It was the mindset for most development teams, and I imagine in your case with you and your family was, well, we want to make this work. And a failure would have been bad. The worst failure would have been it broke through the ice and you lost your remote-controlled vehicle and the camera.
Right. So the thing is, I think it's – what's interesting is you have to obviously have that phase where you're just addressing – every failure that occurs, hoping to minimize other failures because you want to see if the functionality works. Do you want to continue to pursue with this design? Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, as when I'm on the other side, being brought in to help a team improve reliability, getting them to switch out of that mindset and into a different mindset for testing and development, which is the opposite, right? It's very tricky where effectively we are looking to design tests and do exercises that induce as many failure modes as possible. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that you've shown that it works, but now you want to bring that whole process of maturing a product and compress it as much as you can, which means all those variable conditions and of use and environment that happen over time that are discovered, bring them in as close as possible, which means you're trying to expose those failures.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you ever heard the phrase, never do a live demo?
No, I don't think I have.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've seen it most often with software. Somebody is developing a new chunk of code or has a new algorithm they want to show me in the plant, or they created a new widget that's supposed to, you know, raise an arm and turn to the right. And they go, oh, you got to watch this. Check this out. And they push the button or engage it and it smokes or it doesn't work or whatever. And they go, oh, that never happens. Mm. Yeah. Never right. Do a live demo.
Right.
Do a video of it. You know, if you go to a trade show, you better have something that's just going to work. you know, right. and make sure it works before you try it. I'm working with a recent client, and one of the founders' biggest issues is that as they've got a working prototype, and they're getting ready to go to production, and they had the system, one of the failures that crashes it, happen in front of a major potential customer. And they then asked a whole suite of other questions because they said, you know, if that failed and you know that we're coming in here and you wanted to show me this, what else is marginal in your design?
Right.
Right.
And how would they have been able to address that? By trying to create every possible failure, every possible combination of stress, overstress, and giving themselves the opportunity to address them, mm-hmm. right?
And that's what he was asking me to help him with is, I want you to find all the ways this can fail so we can get rid of them. And right. and that was a revelation. You know, most of my clients are, oh, we want you to improve the reliability, but don't break anything and you can't have any samples. And oh, we don't track failures because they're bad. We don't, we focus on the success. You right. know, they might not say that, but it's like, well, you don't track failures. You don't categorize them. You don't spend money on failure analysis. So you, the ones that do occur, you don't understand them. You know?
Right. Well, it's actually funny. I don't know if you saw a graphic that I made, or I'm sure you saw it. If you recall a graphic I made in a post I did about designing the right Accelerated Life Test. And what I did in it is I showed two people talking with each other, you know, and one person is saying to the other, to the customer, thank you, customer, for, you know, finding all these failure modes for us. We didn't really have time to do reliability testing and analyze it.
Yeah.
And the customer responds with hold on a second, I'm actually bringing it up here so I get it right. The customer responds with, I regret meeting you and your company. I hope Elon Musk takes interest in your technology and runs you out of business as a pet project. So that's
No, I don't think I saw that one, Adam.
No, he doesn't know it. Okay, I cracked myself up that I came up with that one. But I mean, that is the feeling. It's, you know, when the customer does realize that you are using field, you know, data, effectively data they're generating to address issues, that's really disappointing, right? As far as, you know, who you want to select as a supplier.
Yeah, and it's part of why we set up beta systems, right? Is that you have a compelling feature or function set, and the customer is interested in getting that. And if you say upfront, hey, this is a proto, this is a beta, you know, we're still learning about this. We want you to have access to it. In trade for that is help us find the failures. You know, we want to know how you use it. If you're upfront about that right from the get-go, it's great. Whereas I've had that discussion with the sales engineer that's going to line up the beta program. And he goes, no, we can't ask them to track any failures. We can't ask them to tell us what's wrong. It just really shouldn't ever not work for them. And I'm like, I think you're missing the point of the beta program. And he's no, this is a sales tool for us to get them hooked on the technology and buy our product. And it just has to work. You can't let it fail.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line is, you know, in the beta phase, there will be failures. You're still maturing your product. So the difference is the example I gave where you're not telling the customer that they're participating in that maturing process versus asking them if they would like to participate in it, you know, and they'll be rewarded and such, and they agree to it. I mean, you get the same outcome where they're running it and having failures, but with an entirely different outcome and how they feel about it. So, yeah, it's just a matter of being honest and saying, you know, we are effectively enlisting you
as a test bed.
a test bed and data source. And they might be very happy to do that, you know, because they get exposure to it early, have input. And
but, you know, there's that resistance across the organization of, I mean, there's a spectrum of responses that we get. If you see a failure, even within the company, they might say, oh, that was a one-time thing. Oh, that was the supplier issue. Oh, that was just a proto. Or it's just this denial that failure was relevant or important. Now, of course, some of them may well be irrelevant, yet dismissing it out of hand without investigating it is, I think, denial. And then there's other customers, you know, other times that you see a failure and you go, well, we're going to fix that in the next round. And I usually look at them and go, well, what are you going to fix? You haven't looked at it. You don't know what failed. Oh, no, we're going to update everything in the next round. No, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, do you know what's really funny? I just recalled there's a picture I actually have hung up on the wall in my workshop, and it's from Popular Mechanics. And they caught the exact moment where this conflict occurred. And in the picture, I'm smiling and everybody else looks sad. And what happened was we were Popular Mechanics came out to cover a testing day that I was doing with Boston Dynamics and their huge robotic horse they were developing for the Marines.
Right.
And as you said, never do a live demo. So the Marines, you know, we'd done a lot of testing in-house in this product as we developed. It worked out a lot of issues. And the Marines wanted to actually test it in the woods and use it. And, you know, there was kind of that mix. And then they invited Popular Mechanics to cover it. I'm like, it doesn't get any more public than that.
Right.
And I knew we were going to find lots of failures because we weren't banging this thing through the woods. And the Marines, we found out how the customer uses it. You know, they use all their equipment like battering rams and all kinds of abuse we never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, they get a tree that we hit the product, the horse, a big robotic horse had been designed where it could try to avoid things. But there also was a mode where the user can kind of drive it on its own, force it to go through things.
Mm-hmm.
So it was designed the way it's protective was big trees would just stop it. It would try to go around. But if it hit it, it had enough protection. It was fine. Small trees, it could go over and push down very easily. It turns out they hit exactly a 3-inch diameter tree that went into the shoulder and got jammed in the shoulder and broke some sensors in the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was like, ah, they actually quoted in the article a Marine saying, it sucks that I broke it. And I'm like, how lucky did we get that we found out that a 3-inch tree can do this? You know, this is amazing. Now we can redesign it to protected against this. We're so lucky to have found this, you know, instead of it being found in the field later.
And that quote didn't make it in, right?
That quote did not make it in. It's just this picture of me like looking excited and everybody else like, ah, and the quote is, it sucks that I broke it.
So you have this picture and a little bubble over it going, reliability engineer.
Exactly. I put it in my workshop at home it's hysterical. And it captured that moment exactly. It's so funny, you know, and talk about public demo.
Well, I mean, it gets ingrained in us from an early age, right? We want the A on the test. We want the 100% on the spelling test. We want the, learning. And I've been reading a lot about learning and learning theory, especially as we're developing more stuff online. And one of the things that comes across over and over again, whether it's in a university setting or a classroom setting or online, is failing at the task initially, but not so bad that you're completely frustrated and you walk away from it, but struggling with it, not getting it quite right the first time, is actually a path to, for vast majority of people, that they will learn way more about it. They have to think deeply about solving the problem.
Yep.
Where if it just works, right? And what we see is like we run the test that we think will exercise it, but we don't learn anything. We didn't run it against three inch diameter trees. And so we didn't really think deeply about solving a problem because we didn't have a problem to solve. But it gives you a false sense of, I got this, right? So if you are in a class or a course and things are coming easy to you and you think you understand the professor and you scan the material and you understand the terminology and stuff, and then they give you a test question that makes you actually think, you're going to bomb, right? Whereas if you would have done those kinds of thought processes in the class and made you struggle with the material, then seeing something that's difficult is not out of place in the exam part. And so the idea of, in product development, yes, we want successes. Yes, we want to show the boss that it worked. Yes, Popular Mechanics should see it ramming down, you know, running through walls of buildings and taking no prisoners kind of thing. That's all great. Yet we don't learn anything then.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing is that it's not doing it the other way. It's the switching mindset. Because the other way is how you start, right? To get it to work and see if it does what you want. And it's actually funny, you know, you just, I guess this is going to be a storytelling episode because you just remind me, you know, as a reliability engineer and a father, I wanted to teach my daughter who's 9, I want to teach them these values where failure is where all the growth and learning happen. And we had an amazing opportunity recently. As a Girl Scout, she was supposed to be, you know, they do the cookie sales every year. So she went around the neighborhood and she sold lots of cookies and collected all the money. And then we kind of noticed a lot of time went by and our cookies didn't arrive. And so we asked her, we're like, what happened? Are they late or what happened? And she's like, oh, yeah. She's like, I think I kind of forgot to turn in the form. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, well, we need to go and return the money for everybody. And she's like, well, the money's kind of gone too. And I was like, what? And she's like, well, there we did a thing, a walkathon at school where we raised money for that. And she's like, I accidentally gave money from both of those things to that. So she gave the Girl Scout money to the walkathon thing and the walkathon money. So now she didn't have the money either. And I was like, and she was really upset. And I sat her down. I said, can you just, you know, let's just talk for a second. She's like, what? I said, this is your shining moment. And she was like, what?
What?
I'm like, this is your shining moment. And she's like, well, what? I'm like, well, here's the thing. Two things. One, it's all about in life, everybody accomplishes things. It's all about how you recover from failures that really, I think, distinguishes different, you know, people that are, you know, excel versus not. And she's like, okay. And I said, secondly, what was the point of the Girl Scout exercise? Was it to get people cookies? I'm like, you know, she's like, you know, I'm like, they can go to the store and get cookies. It's not the point of it. The point of it is for you to learn business practices and, you know, this kind of interaction. And if it all goes smoothly, you know, what do you really learn? You do it every year. I'm like, this is a chance to learn a lot more. So we came up with a plan. She used her own money to pay them back because she had made that mistake and there's accountability. She also baked cookies, which I made her pay for the ingredients for, to give to people. So she went around and I said, come up with what you're going to say in a speech, you know, to tell them. And I'm like, they are never going to forget you. 20 years from now, they're going to be like, Natalie, I remember when you, you know, did this and that was great. And so she was starting to get excited about it. So she went around and very proudly gave the money back, said it was her own money, and it gave them the cookies and had her speech explaining what happened. And she, the more she did it, the prouder she got. She realized how this was a great thing. And then it got even greater because they said, well, we feel bad that the Girl Scouts aren't getting any money. And I told her, I'm like, Natalie, you're about to do a hospital fundraiser. Why don't you have them put it into that? It just had started that week. And so she ended up having a ton of money going to the hospital fundraiser. So she ended up jumping ahead of everybody else in that fundraising. And then in the end, she said the most amazing thing. She goes, I kind of feel bad for the other Girl Scouts that they didn't get to learn as good a business experience as I did. It's like, wow. I was like, that was just the best ever. And I'm happy she got that lesson about, you know, when failures occur, that's your shining moment. That's your time to shine, you know?
Yeah. Well, you see it. There's TV shows and YouTube videos and articles written about how many times, you know, Einstein failed in school. Elon Musk, you know, started like 10 businesses and they all failed, or, you know, all these different people. I think the guy from Alibaba in China, Ma, I think his name, I'm drawing a complete blank, failed miserably until he hit on this idea of delivering food for people and made that work. It what bothers me is that those are the stories that get told, but most of us culturally just don't internalize that. And we see people persisting, we see people facing adversity and succeeding. Yet when we're in a prototype run or we're in a design review, or you've seen it with FMEA, is you see the designer grab their product and cradle it like a baby and start get teary-eyed. You guys are telling me how ugly my baby is.
Right. Right. It would take a break for a hug and then get back to work.
It's okay. It's okay, you know, but we're so ingrained that, you know, and in Asian cultures, to tell somebody no, I mean, it's not just a product failure kind of an issue. It's just if somebody asks you a question and it's a yes-no based question, it's not polite to say no. It's say, oh, that would be difficult, or maybe another time, or you divert it, but you don't tell them, no, I refuse your request. That's just impolite. So see, there's all kinds of views about failure that it's ingrained in us, so that when you and I come into the door and say, hey, we want to go break your product or tell you how ugly your baby is, and then try to explain that it's good for you. Right. You know,
this is your shining moment as a Girl Scout.
That's right. That's a hard sell. Yeah. That's a hard thing to do. And I think I don't know if it's we have the wrong PR group working for us as a reliability engineering. Maybe we need a lobbying group a fundraising so we can do a Super Bowl commercial.
Right, right.
Something, but failures are good.
I guess it's up to us to be, to be the education on that, and tell our stories. And maybe now in my education programs, I'll emphasize that more as a more fundamental, concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those where failures are gold, especially when you find it, not your customer.
Right.
Maybe we should make some banners, I don't think Deming advocated putting banners up in the building saying,
You like buttons. I could see you making buttons.
Yeah, I could do buttons on that. Yeah, I could do buttons. Right. Well, let's ask our listeners, how do you overcome this with your organization? How do you convince the rest of your team that if you have a failure, it's good? It's actually, that's a good thing. Or how do you promote failures or celebrate failures? Or how do you help your team recognize the value in learning something because something failed or didn't behave correctly? We'd love to hear from you. And we've been getting a handful of emails and comments and stuff and some reviews on iTunes. Those are wonderful. They make our day. I don't know about you, Adam, but when I see one of those things, I'm like, we got listeners. We love it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then every now and then we get a question, and it almost certainly turns into an episode, because I think a big part of the show, and I'm speaking now for all of our co-hosts, is that we're doing this because, one, we like talking about reliability topics in general, but more importantly is we like helping other people and hopefully you're picking up some insights or some ideas or concepts. And it makes it even more useful when it's one of your questions, when we were actually asking, when you join us at the table and join the discussion with us by supplying us with a story or a question or something like that. So head over to reliability.fm, and there you'll see the Reliability Engineering Podcast Network. And there's 5 shows now, and you'll see Speaking of Reliability, and there's plenty of comments fields and ways to get in touch with us. And our emails are up on the About pages, so you can certainly get in touch with us, and we'd love to hear from you. So with that, Adam, let's go out and break stuff today.
I love it.
Yeah, hopefully not our Skype connection, but
But I always tell my customers to tap into the 6-year-old in them. Remember when they were kids and you pulled out your toys and you wanted to break stuff to see how it worked? That's all we're asking. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, I think I got thwarted a little bit because I broke my mom's toaster.
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, my parents still have parts and screws. They don't know where they go from things I pulled apart. I'm like, why is there a pile of screws here? I'm like, I don't know. I got to go. I'm going to go outside and play.
That's right. I'm going to go break something else now.
I got to go break something else. At least they should be happy I did something good with that mindset.
That's right. All right. Well, cool, Adam. Appreciate it. And hopefully it's the lake is inviting, but not too inviting. You actually get some work done today.
Exactly. The horrible summer balance.
That's right. All right. Talk to you later, Adam.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.